Hi. Welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? I'm your host, Owen Benjamin, and I'm on the road right now. Well, actually, I'm in Saranac Lake, New York. Amy and I just got a house here, and we just took a look, and it's cool. It needs a lot of work. Not going to lie to you. Needs some work, but it's beautiful. It's on a hill. You can see a lake, an acre. Awesome basement that I can set up a sweet podcast studio. And it's closer to a lot of gigs. A lot of gigs are in Northeast. So it's cool. And my family's awesome here. I've just been hanging out with my two nieces. They freaked out over Walter. They loved him. They just couldn't get enough of him. They just kept like holding him and touching his face. And Walter looked really happy. So that's awesome. My brother's been working today, so I'm excited for him to come home so we can do some brother stuff. But I want to build a chicken coop. I want to build an outdoor sauna. Those are two of my goals. And winter is broken here. It's beautiful. But last weekend I was at the Chicago Improv, and it was very fun and interesting. I got a lot of writing done because I've finally broken into the Chicago ability of filling the room, because it's probably my third week doing the Chicago Improv. The first time I did it was 10 years ago. I featured for Nick Swartzen, and I've loved that area ever since. Obviously, Chicago's great, but it seats over 500 people. And when you're doing five shows, that's 2,500 people to like fill it. So I never have been able to do that. Thursday, it was maybe half full, but for the first time in my career since I've worked Chicago, they opened the curtains so they could seat the whole room on Saturday. And Friday was pretty full too. So I got to, that's the best place to work on material, is a full room. Because that's when you know, because when it's too light and too spread out, you never know what is real and what isn't, because you're basically just trying to entertain individuals. And a lot of people are crazy. So it was a great weekend. I know I'm rambling a little, but hey, that's what podcasts are for. Because this isn't a stage. A lot of you guys are probably driving or working or have a baby and headphones in. And it's fun to just listen to stuff. Lately, I've been getting into true crime podcasts, but they do kind of give me nightmares. Anyway, so I will be playing clips from it on Friday. I don't have an ability to do that right now. I can't edit on this computer. It's too weird and shitty. But I do have an interview for this week. I have a professional NFL kicker. Yes. Because I did a charity on Sunday for a bunch of these NFL dudes. It's called Allie and Friends, about a form of cancer that's really terrifying. So I was in town anyway, so I just did this show. And Pat McAfee, who is a professional kicker for the Colts, was doing stand-up. And I ever since interviewing Mick Foley, the professional wrestler, I've had a fascination with how extremely talented athletes attack stand-up comedy. So I got to sit down with him before the show, and so I'm going to play that for you in a little bit. But I finally have figured out how to go from my Fitbit joke to all the new baby material. I'm going to be playing those clips on Friday, hopefully, if I can get to a computer. I'm in a region of the country where there's not a lot of technology. I'm just going to put it like that. There is not a, like, technology is like rope, or like a rock is considered pretty high tech. And if you have a rope and a rock, you know, that's just you're Steve Jobs out here. But there's a sense of peace that is pretty great. I've been obsessed with the show The Flash, so I wrote something about it. I'm going to read it to you. The Flash on CW, it's now also on Netflix. That's where I went on a bender. So here's a little essay I wrote about The Flash and what we can all learn from it as far as political correctness. The sun started to rise deep into my ninth hour of a Flash marathon on Netflix. As my eyes ached, but my heart wouldn't let me stop the bender I was on, something dawned on me. It's great when things dawn on you at the dawn of a day. I didn't write that in the essay. I just kind of threw that in there. This show is one of my favorite shows. Or no. This show is one of the few shows that actually depicts a diverse world as it would appear in reality, or at least how we would want it to be. And like a flash, it occurred to me why everyone is annoyed by left-wing do-gooders, because they are the most bigoted people on the planet. I'm pro-gay marriage, pro-choice, pro-everything, and yet I find myself dreading dinner conversation with the political party that was supposed to represent me. Why would I prefer to hang out with gun-toting hillbillies, the members of the group that hold more of my philosophical beliefs? Why? I'll tell you why. Because the left wing has developed a sort of look-at-how-diverse-we-are mentality, where every show produced to push this agenda, and it is an agenda, by the way, knocks you over the head with its diverse characters. If you've ever hung out with a self-loathing closet homosexual, every conversation about women goes to, oh, yeah, I want to have sex with her, right, guys? They overcompensate so much for their deep love of male penis that they develop an extreme caricature of a straight man. That's not how straight males act. We don't sit around talking about banging chicks all the time. That's what closet homosexuals do. This is exactly how the left treats everyone who isn't white, straight, male, and rich. Isn't it ironic? Don't you think? In most TV shows, because Hollywood is so politically left, it is now located deep in the Pacific Ocean, gay characters talk about gay issues. They're usually lisping. They're rollerblading. Blacks talk about the struggles of being black, and Asians, well, for some reason, they aren't in these shows. No one in quote-unquote diversity groups just is. They're pushed in your face in a desperate attempt to hide the reality of the situation. The ultra-liberal left wing is insanely rich, insanely white, and very exclusive. Isn't it ironic? On The Flash, I didn't even think about the fact his dad is black, the police captain is gay and married, and the main love interest is interracial. Never occurred to me. Literally didn't dawn on me. Because it wasn't the plot. The plot wasn't that. The plot was just the plot. They were merely characters. The way life actually is. In real life, black people don't only want to talk about Ferguson, Missouri, as a cop plots their demise from a Dunkin' Donuts. In reality, gay men aren't exclusively rollerblading to a Coldplay concert as a group of rednecks chase them with pitchforks. They're just people who are gay. I'm a comedian married to a Mexican engineer with two college professors as parents who encouraged me to sing in operas and consider George W. Bush the devil. My mom reveres the earth as our female goddess, and my dad cries when he watches figure skating. If I have grown exhausted by the liberal agenda, you know it's gotten bad. So, in closing, I highly recommend the show The Flash. And next time someone tries to push diversity and change aggressively in your face, assume they are the actual barriers to making America a place of equal rights and opportunities. Yeah, that's how I feel. And it's not a political... Sometimes I don't like saying political stuff, but this isn't political. It's not. I'm not a political person. It's about right and wrong. It's about being so annoyed by the bigotry of the left wing. They've switched sides. I remember growing up, I always considered the left wing the good people and the right wing the evil, greedy people. And God, is it reversed. Not that the right is good. I mean, Cruz wants to make dildos illegal. I mean, the guy's a sick fucker. But it's exhausting. It's exhausting watching television now where the characters are all like in your face about their demographic, because that's not reality. That is never how it is. My piano teacher was transgendered when I was 11. That's the last thing we talked about. Want to know what we talked about? Music. Because he was a piano teacher. That's my two cents on that. Oh, yeah. Another joke I added. I don't know if you guys have seen my thing about sombreros, but I was like, Jose and Jose B, that was our costume. Now I threw in a third and we're One Direction. I'm doing a lot about breastfeeding these days because it is very important in my day-to-day life. Everything revolves around breasts and feeding and my crying little Walter. But he's such a goddamn good kid. Flying with him was smooth. He chilled out, which was awesome. A song I'm working on, and if you guys have any ideas, I would like you to email them to me. I want to do a song about names, like about what names say about you, because my brother and his wife, Mary, are about to have their third child, a little boy, and they're debating about what names they want to use. And so my brother and I were laughing about, oh, he said something really funny the other day. We're talking about how the show Knight Rider from the 80s, the car that could talk, like that's real now. That's like Siri. Remember Kit? And he was talking about how that was a man who wanted to be a car. He was Trans Am gendered. Okay, so I think if your name is Todd, you wear khakis. If your name's Brittany, you give BJs. If your name is, this is what I want help from you guys. Like, tell me, oh, Larry. Larry can go all over the map. Gary and Larry, I mean, they're monsters. Mark, you played hockey. Let me see. What are some other names? Owen, you're either black or a comedian or from Wales. I can't even think of any names right now. Adam, that's just a pretty solid name. I don't really know. Benedict, it means you're really into eggs. You take a lot of pride in your breakfast food. Greg, you're gay. That one, there's no debate. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other names. But I just think a name says a lot about who you are as a person. I want to do a character named either Liberal Larry or How Dare You Howie, where we do sketches. And I want to do a sketch where it's like there's like a black couple and then How Dare You Harry and his girlfriend are sitting there. And everything they say, they like put down their knife and fork and they're like, how dare you? Because they feel they're being racist. I took a survey the other day. Let's see this. I said it. I think it's hilarious that Wilmer. What's that dude? Dave. What's that? Oh, man, I feel so disrespectful that I'm not pronouncing his name right. But the dude, the late show host guy, called Obama nigga. Thoughts? And the categories were I'm white and offended. I'm black and offended. I'm Asian and who cares? 11% of the population is white and offended, 2% black and offended, 10% is merely Asian with no opinion, and 77% do not care. I think that's very telling. It's a very telling stat. I think that white people are trying to protect people that don't need protecting. And it feels good to be in Saranac Lake where people are just poor and white. It really reminds you that this is all just an illusion invented by cable news. Cable news is the devil. I saw Verizon strike the other day. And I think their slogan should be, can you hear us now? Evidence from the Curiosity rover shows Mars once had oxygen-rich atmosphere. Scientists discovered a mobile sign and a partial shell station buried in the dead Martian dirt. That's another joke I did this week. Is there anything else I want to share? Oswego tickets are going fast. I've already sold most of them. So if you want to go May 21st, that's how I talk. My name's Owen. Oh, today is May the 4th, and everyone's saying that that's Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. I think that that's really mean. You're making fun of people with a lisp. By the way, putting the letter S in the word lisp is the most cruel thing you can possibly do. Because you lisp when you say it. Lisp. I have a lisp. What's that? I have a lisp. I can't understand you, bro. I have a lisp. Well, you have a list? What's on your list? Fuck you. So So the Foundry in Oswego, May 21st. Go to hugepianist.com to get tickets. I will be in Boston at Laughs, May 13th and 14th, or 14th and 15th, whatever Friday, Saturday that is. My brother's going to come down. We're going to rage. It's going to be awesome. So get tickets, hugepianist.com. May 28th, I'm doing Cherokee Nation, Oklahoma. I'm doing the casino with my buddy Skylar Stone. He's done the podcast. He's wicked funny. I'm honored that he's opening for me. He just wants some good bro time. And then Gotham, New York, June 24th, that weekend. Come down. Okay, so here's an interview backstage with Pat McAfee. Great, great, great guy. We ended it kind of abruptly because we're going on stage, but there's a lot to learn from this dude because he's on the world stage. NFL is intense. So I learned from him. I've been doing stand-up like infinitely longer than he has, but I learned from him in this interview because his point of view is so fascinating because it's just a world stage and the stakes are high. If you're punting a football and you get popped in the chin, it hurts really bad. And there's a microscope on these people. And he's only 28 years old. So I'm glad he sat down with me. And so I'm going to share that with you. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Comment if you like it. And that means a lot to do because it spreads the word. It shows people that they can trust listening to it, that it's fun. So do that. Or else you don't even fucking love me, man. Whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com. Email me what you think names represent. Like a name and then what it means. Like what kind of people you've met. Like people named Troy are usually dickheads. Even though my mom's maiden name is Troy and I love that name. But it's like I don't really know that many Troys that aren't like, they don't want to like kick dirt at you. Granted, I'm from a pretty aggressive part of the country. All right, enjoy the interview with Pat, and much love, everybody. See you guys soon.
You guys are so good as professional athletes. Like, what do they teach you at this point?
So right now, everything is, when you get to this level, it's all about, like, working on, like, almost perfecting everything. That's what it is. So right now, the off-season workouts are just so you perfect your shit, learn your stuff, try to get stronger, but mostly it's about meeting everybody. Because in the offseason, it's a big turnover in the NFL. We lose like 60% of our roster every year. So you're meeting a whole new group of dudes, kind of like building camaraderie up. That's the purpose of offseason.
Right.
That's really
good. Right, right.
You want to be in shape, obviously. You want to get in shape because you're a professional athlete. But mostly it's just about meeting everybody and getting cool with everybody.
It's like comedy festivals for comics.
Yeah, just kind of
like they put everyone in Montreal and it's not about the shows, it's about the high fives.
By the way, awesome?
Yeah.
They have to be.
I mean, Aspen was the best. And back in the day, it would just be like every comic you like is there, and it's just us and Aspen.
That has to be the coolest thing ever.
That is my favorite thing.
That has to be the coolest thing ever.
My favorite thing about comedy is the community of it, you know?
Like, well, that's what I've been learning. So I haven't been doing comedy that long. Tonight will probably be like the 11th or 12th time I've been on a stage.
Cool.
First time outside of Indiana. But there's a club called Morty's Comedy Club in Indiana.
Yeah, I've done that before.
Yeah, I've been hanging out there, and a lot of comedians come through there. Gary Goldman just came through there last week. It was a completely different style than I've ever seen in my life. Bobcat was there. And I get a chance to just watch these guys and meet these guys. And, like, everybody's just been kind of, like, looking out for me and helping me out. It's the comedy community has been more welcoming than any community I've ever
been. It's very, very supportive.
It's awesome.
Yeah, people, like, sometimes think that because of the nature of comedy, how it's can be very aggressive and it's very rebellious, that we would do that to each other, and it really isn't.
Yeah, I've got a lot of help from a lot of people, and at the beginning, I didn't want to steal anybody's laughs, you know? So, like, people would be like, hey, try this punchline with this, and I'd be like, nah, I don't want to steal your line or whatever. He's like, you're not stealing anything.
It's fluid.
Yeah, he's like, it's me just helping you out a little bit. If you want to use it, if not, no big deal. And people have just been so nice, and you hit it right in the head, like, the comedy community is just, it's been awesome.
Yeah, I wanted to show that to people, so I did a documentary called 60 Minutes, 7 Days, where I had all my, like, some of the funniest people I know just send me premises, and I just try and write an hour in a week, and I would bomb a ton, but just to show, like, you know, like, the Impractical Jokers, and, like, Josh Wolfe, and Kunal from Big Bang, and all these other, it's just, like, the helping of it, because everyone makes it seem like, it's like, well, I'm the one who does the joke about women being different than men.
Yeah.
It's like, No, you're just grabbing life, you know? And when you can do it with other people, it's the best.
It's been so much fun. I mean, it's been... I never expected to be... and I don't even want to call myself a comedian yet, because I don't think I've really earned it yet. But getting on a stage and telling stories and jokes has become my favorite thing in the world.
Compare it to kicking. Like, compare it to that mental...
So when I punt, if I hit a shank or fuck up...
Like, right.
I got 52 teammates... Their families that are getting disappointed. My coaches, they're getting disappointed. Their families are disappointed.
Right.
You got a whole fan base. It's a lot of pressure. You
know? Tons of pressure.
And the pressure isn't from, like, within. It's just like if you fuck up, you're really letting a lot of people down, you know, because you work all year for 16 games. That's it. So if you mess up just a little bit and you're the reason your team loses, it's like all year you work for this. Everybody spent so much time grinding for this, so when you mess up it feels so awful, and that's where the pressure comes from, is you feel so awful. But in comedy, it's just it's there's no comparison. It's comedy is like therapeutic to me, almost.
Totally. Well, you also sound like you're the opposite of a sociopath, because you're thinking.
I want that to be on my fucking
head. Opposite of a sociopath.
I want that to be on my head,
because a lot of people wouldn't think that way. If you were affected by other people like that, a lot of people don't think that way. Some people would be like, you know, it's like, I just, like, if I fuck up, I think I might not make as much money. But you're thinking, like, did I do good? Like, you're seeking people to, like, be happy.
I just don't want to disappoint others.
Exactly,
like,
yeah.
I get so mad.
That's cool, man.
Well, it's because you're in it together. That's a team sport. You know, that's the difference between a team sport and, I think, like, individual sports. It's because, now, granted, there's a lot of professional athletes that don't think like that. And negativity hogs publicity, so you hear about them a lot more.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm a team sport guy. I played soccer when I was a kid. It's just... if I fuck up, I feel like I let down everybody else. And it's an interesting, I don't know. I think a lot of people think that way.
How do you handle when a joke bombs? Because in my podcast, it's called Why Didn't They Laugh? Because I like to analyze my jokes bombing and how it takes it. Like, because I played sports growing up, obviously not on your level, but like, I think a thing athletes can take to it is the acceptance of failure and working on it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the like really emotionally sensitive guys, like the guys that haven't been through a lot of shit,
yeah,
they're like, oh, they didn't laugh, that's wrong. But like, athletes are more the type, or like musicians, to be like, oh, how do I restructure that, how do I make that better?
Well, the big thing for me is I've only been able to do one open mic, really, where I can practice some stuff.
Yeah.
And then all the other stuff I go right into theaters. So like, everything I've ever done is in front of a theater.
Wow, that's cool.
No, it is cool. But I think the big thing, I have zero fear.
Yeah.
So if, because I have a heck of a backup plan, you know, like if I'm not funny, and that's why I have so much respect for guys that do this for a full-time living, because your brain has to operate at a level that's so high. And for me, if I fail, my mindset's always like, if I fuck up, I got to keep kicking balls, you know, that's
right,
every time I think. But there's been a couple like ideas I went with that didn't hit as hard as I thought they were going to. But then I just tried to restructure. I tape and listen to every set.
Smart.
It's like watching film for me. Like,
totally.
So I'm trying to be really good at this, because I feel like if people are spending money, they deserve a good fucking show.
Yeah.
So I've restructured a couple things that I didn't think hit. I'm going to try some stuff tonight that I've restructured a little bit to see how it goes. But I think they'll go well.
Yeah.
I haven't bombed flat on my face yet. Tonight might be the first time. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, it can always come. Not like a full act, but just like those little moments.
Yeah, where you think you're going to get a reaction.
Yeah. Like, your shows will come off, and I'm like, oh, that sucked. And people are like, you killed. I'm like, you didn't hear the panda thing?
Yeah, just that one. Yeah. And I had a couple of those. I was like, man. Like, in your head, you're like, oh, this is going to kill. This is going to kill. This is going to kill. And as soon as you tell it, you get nothing. You're like, it's very disappointing. It's like, fuck.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I listen to every set, so I try to fix it.
Do you think, like, the big stage of the NFL has helped you deal with pressure? Because it's almost like a Navy SEAL having someone talk shit at a bar to them, where they're like, come on, guy.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah, where it's like you've dealt with the pressure of punting in an NFL game. Like,
so the big thing for me is I got arrested for a very embarrassing arrest, and it was, like, national headlines, right? And I became the butt of a joke in Indianapolis and in Indiana. And it was at that point where I just stopped giving a fuck what anybody thinks of me.
That was like me with a Beyonce tweet at a similar situation.
Somebody attacked you.
You
can't attack Queen Bee, man.
Oh, no.
You can't attack Bieber. You can't attack Bieber.
Barbara Streisand.
Beyonce.
Yep.
And
Barbara. I mean, there's
Lady Gaga. You can't go after
Gaga. No, you can't go after Gaga.
They got people.
They do. It's just a swarm of bees. So what happened? So that happened.
So I got a public intoxication arrest where I allegedly went swimming into a canal, right? Cops right. have their story, I have mine. But that was during a bye week, during the season.
Right.
So bye week in Indianapolis, there's no other news story. So I was the headline everywhere, right? My mugshot was horrible. It was a mix between Gary Busey and Carrot Top. I mean, it was awful.
Right.
And I became the joke of Indiana. They ran my mugshot everywhere. There was reporters broadcasting live from the scene of the crime where I allegedly went into the canal. Like, it was just everywhere. My mom found out through TMZ because it said, Indianapolis Colts punter arrested for being wasted with 9 A's.
Right.
That's how my dad answered the phone when I called him from jail. I go, hey, man, I fucked up. He goes, oh, we know. Yeah, TMZ reported you were wasted with 9 A's, Pat. 9 fucking A's is what my dad actually said.
2 more beers would add 11 A's.
Yeah, we could have got there.
Yeah.
I think we could have hit double digits.
Yeah.
But it was at that moment where you become the laughing stock of everything. I just stopped giving a fuck about what anybody thought.
Right.
And I think that has helped me more in football and in comedy. Because I care what my teammates think, my friends and stuff like that. But everybody else, like, I hope they have a good time. But to be honest, I don't really give a fuck. Like, you're either going to like me or not.
Yeah, because when shit like that happens, you see it's not as bad as... The fear is almost worse.
Yeah, you're scared that whenever you think everybody in the world's going to mock you.
Right.
Like, oh, it's going to be off. It happened. And it was like, well, fuck it.
I'm still alive. I'm still hydrated.
And you learn who's cool, you know? Like, my parents come to every show I do.
Yeah.
So every time I go on stage, and my parents have heard some of the same shit, I'm trying to make them laugh. Like, I'm trying to make my parents, my brother, my friends laugh. Like, tonight I got a couple of my friends here. Like, I'm trying to make them laugh. And I feel like if they laugh, everybody else will laugh.
Yeah.
That's kind of the mindset.
How does that turnover of the NFL affect people? I never realized that 60% is new.
It's because the bottom half of an NFL roster is special teamers, guys that are on special teams each week, backups, stuff like that. To stick with a team, I've been lucky to be on the Colts for 8 years now. It's going to be my 8th year. But it's such a business. If they can get a guy for cheaper,
who
can kind of do the same job, guys are gone, guys come and go. I mean, it's just... That's the way the NFL is. You can't really build up a lot of great friendships with many people because they're gone.
It's like that in entertainment. It's like you shoot a movie and it's like it's a month and a half and you're like best friends. It's almost like a cult.
Yeah.
And then it's gone.
I've never seen it again.
Yeah. Like in TV shows those are the roughest. I was on a sitcom for 3 years on TBS and it's like they become your family. Like people are playing your mom and your...
Yeah.
And then it's just...
All day, every day.
And then there's a new president of TBS and it's just gone.
Well, you're all working for the same goal, right?
Yeah,
so that's
totally.
How you really build the camaraderie comes, I think, from people
shared
striving
purpose.
For the same goal, right?
Totally.
So when you're on a show, you're all striving for the same goal. We want to make this as entertaining as possible. Everybody's in. Teams the same way, so you befriend people quickly because you guys are experiencing the same thing, and then it's over. And I was a best man in one of my friend's wedding, and he was on the Colts, and then now he's on the Cardinals. I see him like twice a year.
Yeah.
Maybe once a year, and I was with him every day.
That's crazy.
3 years straight, you know what I mean? It's an interesting world. It's a business. It's 100% business.
How do you think people can get around that business mentality? I'm trying to break free of that right now.
I can't. I'm in it heavy.
Yeah, I know. I've been in it. I've been in the ranks of it for a while, and I kind of want to just go the other way.
Well, my big issue is, like, so once I started doing these comedy shows, right? So I run out the theater. I sell the tickets, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of see the business behind selling out an event and selling an event.
Yeah.
And once you see that, then you start thinking about what the NFL teams are doing. And for me, my big thing now is I'm always thinking, like, how much money are they making off of me in return? It's like a big bit. Everything's a business. You know?
Yeah.
And it's sad to think that way. Kind of, I think, what you were alluding to.
I just found the more success I had, the more people would be disappointed in me and I had to work more.
Really? Is it?
I felt that way. I was like, okay, my goal was just to be able to headline a comedy club. I moved to L.A., 22 years old. And then Sandler.
Where are you from?
Upstate New York, near Syracuse.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. And so I go out there with my buddies. Oh, it's crazy. Lake effect.
L.A. had to be a great...
Yeah, it was like Narnia.
Oh.
Avocados and threesomes.
Just avocados.
It's just like, wait a minute, what is this? Everyone over 25 isn't 5,000 pounds.
You're looking for unobtainium out there.
Like, literally. Yeah. But then that also becomes exhausting too, though. I call them indoor cats. Because they're so sensitive. Like, if you make fun of them, they're like, they get sad.
And that's it for this week. Thanks to Pat McAfee, who did a fantastic job. I stuck around and watched him. He does a very storytelling vibe on stage. Like, he just tells stories, and they're super funny and very charming, very Irish. I don't even know if he's Irish. I'm guessing Pat McAfee, but he has that, like, long story vibe where he, like, charms the audience into, like, being with him the whole time. And that's a really amazing trait. So, yeah, it was great to talk to him about life, about comedy, about camaraderie, about teams. You know, that stuff fascinates me because he's been in the NFL for 8 years and 60% of the team is gone every year. And then you have to repurpose. I've noticed that with a lot of my friendships as I get older. Friendships are tough to maintain the older you get because your purpose changes. It's really special to have those friends that aren't friends because you have a shared interest in something else. I have a few of those, and I'm very fortunate to have that, but there's nothing like a common goal to keep people together, and that was a very interesting part of that interview. Okay, thanks again for listening, everybody. Much love. Peace.